Welcome to Throwing Mountains Weekly Strength. I'm your host, Chris Bollinger. For the next 14 or 15 minutes, we're going to draw strength from the Bible. I encourage you to make this a daily practice on your own. Our sixth episode in the series on tough topics is on integrity. The Bible passage for this episode is Proverbs 2, 1-8. I'll read it from the ESV, the English Standard Version. My son, if you receive my words and treasure up my commandments with you, making your ear attentive to wisdom and inclining your heart to understanding, yes, if you call out for insight and raise your voice for understanding, if you seek it like silver and search for it as for hidden treasures, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk in integrity, guarding the paths of justice and watching over the way of his saints. In the film The Untouchables, Elliot Ness is frustrated with his inability to break into Al Capone's crime empire. Beat cop Jim Malone has a conversation with Ness at the front of a Catholic church's sanctuary.
You said you wanted to know how to get Capone. Do you really want to get him? You see what I'm saying? What are you prepared to do?
Everything within the law.
And then what are you prepared to do? If you open the ball on these people, Mr. Ness, you must be prepared to go all the way. Because they won't give up the fight until one of you is dead.
I want to get Capone. I don't know how to get him.
You want to get Capone? Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way. And that's how you get Capone. Now, do you want to do that? Are you ready to do that? I'm making you a deal. Do you want this deal?
I have sworn to put this man away with any and all legal means at my disposal, and I will do so.
Well, the Lord hates a coward. Do you know what a blood oath is, Mr. Ness?
Yes.
Good. Because you just took one.
After Malone is murdered, Ness's resolve to stay within the law wavers, even when Capone is brought to court to face charges of tax evasion. At the courthouse, one of Capone's men, Nitty, tries to escape from law enforcement. Ness, who has determined that Nitty killed Malone, chases Nitty and finally corners him as he hangs from a rope off the courthouse roof.
Here I am, treasure man. Come on. Arrest me. What are you waiting for? Don't just stand there. Arrest me.
Don't push me.
They're gonna burn you, buddy.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm gonna come see you burn, you son of a bitch, because you killed my friend.
He died like a pig.
What did you say?
I said that your friend died screaming like a stuck Irish pig. Now you think about that when I beat the rat.
Ness throws Nitty off the roof, and he dies on the street below. Elliot Ness, at least the film version of Elliot Ness, was not known for his integrity. Early Christians were. They refused to renounce their faith, even when refusal meant death. Persecution actually seemed to increase, not decrease, Christians' faith in God. Paul wrote in Philippians that his imprisonment made believers much more bold to speak the word without fear. Persecution of Christians intensified after the first century. At that point, all eyewitnesses to the ministry, death, and resurrection of Jesus were long dead, and yet Christians demonstrated unshakable faith even as they were being killed for it. The bedrock of their faith was the four Gospels, the epistles or letters of Paul, and other letters from first century apostles. These Gospels and letters eventually were canonized as the books of the New Testament. But how did early Christians know that these documents were true? The main reason that believers had confidence in the books of the New Testament is because the authors of those books demonstrated again and again that they had written with integrity. Here are some examples. Mark 15:21 says this, "And they compelled a passerby, Simon of Cyrene, who was coming in from the country, the father of Alexander and Rufus, to carry his cross." Mark is saying, in essence, that Simon is dead, but readers can verify the event with Simon's sons, who are still alive. Both the Gospel of Luke and the Acts of the Apostles open with an introduction for someone named Theophilus. The introduction in Luke describes the Gospel as an orderly account. After traveling with Paul and interviewing many believers, the physician Luke wrote his two letters, each of which is loaded with evidence about what Jesus and his apostles said and did, so that Theophilus and other readers could be certain that what they had been taught was true. 1 Corinthians 15:3 says this, "For I delivered to you as of first importance what I also received." Paul met for days and even weeks with Peter and other disciples and received the gospel from these eyewitnesses. I marvel at the integrity exhibited by the early Christians, but I also have good examples of integrity in my own life. One man who demonstrated integrity to me throughout his life was my dad. One way that he did this was in how he treated my mom. When I was growing up, I rarely heard my dad praise my mom. I knew that he loved her, but he didn't seem to give her a lot of verbal affirmation. What he did do, however, was partner with her on everything. My mom and dad always were on the same team and always presented a united front. The partnership worked well in part because my mom and dad each had clearly defined roles and responsibilities and rarely, if ever, stepped on each other's toes. To stay on the same page, they talked frequently, mostly in private. When they had differences or disagreements, they worked them out while we slept. Underlying their partnership were two key elements, healthy respect and a mutual trust that ran very deep. This partnership lasted long after their four kids were grown and out of the house. When my parents were in their 50s, they purchased the Book Nook, a dilapidated bookstore in a depressed city in the heart of the Rust Belt. When they bought the store, it made most of its profit on sales of porn and cigarettes. Working as a team, my parents replaced all the dirty books and magazines with legitimate books, including a big selection of children's books. Eventually, they tripled the size of the store. They forged partnerships with and donated money to local public schools. They played host to signing parties for local authors. They even adopted a fat gray cat named Smokey who lived at the store and sat with children as they read books. The Book Nook became one of the largest independently owned bookstores in the state of Ohio. Another way that my dad showed integrity was by putting others ahead of himself. In his letter to the Philippians, Paul says this, "Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others." My dad modeled that passage again and again. Before he became an entrepreneur in his 50s, my dad worked in human resources, mostly for small manufacturing companies. He rarely talked about his job, and I always got the sense that he really didn't enjoy it. But he cared about the people with whom he worked. In the early 1960s, when my dad worked for a trucking company based in Akron, Ohio, he was charged with integrating an all-white office. My dad knew that the first man of color hired into that office would face racism, both outspoken and unspoken, from some of the other employees. So my dad looked for a man with broad shoulders. Even the strongest man would need support. After hiring an African-American named John, my dad gave John consistent, visible support in the workplace. He also became John's close friend. When the company was acquired, my dad left the firm and moved our family to Oshkosh, Wisconsin. We never lived in Akron again. But the friendship between my dad and John remained strong for decades. My dad used to get 2 weeks or 10 working days of vacation each year. He used at least one of the 2 weeks for a family vacation trip so that we four kids and our parents could have a shared experience somewhere other than our home. Our typical vacation consisted of driving 600 miles each way to the Outer Banks of North Carolina, which was an affordable place for a family of six to enjoy a week at the beach. My dad never complained about the drive or the headaches from us kids. He simply put us first. My dad also put his parents first when they reached their final years. My grandfather declined first, a victim of slow-onset Alzheimer's. Eventually, he reached the point where he could no longer drive, which trapped my grandmother at home because she had never gotten her driver's license. Working with his sisters, my dad moved his parents into an excellent progressive care facility so that they could live their final years in the same location. Following my dad's lead, we kids visited our grandparents as often as we could, and our children got to meet and spend time with their great-grandparents. My dad's integrity taught me two other things: play by the rules and honor your commitments. When my older sisters were teens and preteens, we had our first family meeting. The topic of the meeting was whether or not my sisters could get their ears pierced. My dad announced that rather than mom and he making the decision, we would discuss it as a family and then vote on it. Mom and he each would get a full vote, and each of us kids would get a half vote. If the vote resulted in a tie, then my dad would break the tie. My dad figured he couldn't lose, until my mom stunned him and voted yes for pierced ears. Even though he was angry about it, he honored the decision from the family meeting. My sisters all got their ears pierced, and I learned that a man of integrity plays by the rules, even when he loses. A few years before that, when we arrived in a small central Ohio town called Coshocton, the church that we attended replaced its choir director with a recent college graduate, causing most of the choir to quit. Eager to get some new members, especially men, the new director approached my dad and asked him if he was willing to join the choir. My dad wasn't much of a singer, and he needed people in a Sunday school class that he was teaching, so he proposed a deal. He would join the choir if the director would attend his class. The director agreed. According to my dad, the director attended class for exactly 1 week. But my dad honored his commitment to the church choir. My mom joined him. So did each of my sisters when they entered high school, and I did the same. We also joined the Coshocton Community Choir, which, to this day, is one of the best community choirs in the country. My dad never had a great singing voice. I don't have one either. But there's nothing like raising your voice in harmony with others to praise God in song. Following my dad's lead gave me the opportunity to sing in places like the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C., to perform in an opera in the Bolshoi Theater in Moscow, and most importantly, to sing with my extended family members at Christmas time in my parents' small church in Northeast Ohio. Life is more meaningful and more precious when you sing and when you live with integrity. I learned that from my dad. Next week, I'll look at the topic of masculinity. I hope you'll join me for that. Please pick up a copy of 52 Weeks of Strength for Men. You'll find it to be a good resource on this journey. Have a good week, men.